You're listening to Red Center, your roundup of Red Camera news from the crew at fxguide.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's Red Center. I'm Mike Seymour, actually coming to you from New Zealand. And Jason, you're across the pond in Sydney?
I am. How are you?
Good, good. Now, we're split up this week, but in fact, we've been working day and night, literally haven't had much sleep because of the Red announcement. And what we've got for you this week is a special Red Centre where we're going to not only discuss what happened with the DSMC, the Digital Stills and Motion Capture System that Red launched today, but more importantly, we're going to answer a lot of questions about the stuff in between what was in the press release. What we've managed to do is score an amazing interview with Ted Schwilowitz from Red, where we actually discuss point by point a whole lot of the things that have been floating around today as sort of question marks between what has been, I guess, the obvious big points and how some of these points will actually work in practice. And I actually learned quite a lot from doing this, Jason, because there was some stuff in there that was kind of, well, stunning, and there was other stuff in there that I was sort of stunning and couldn't quite understand. For example, what the Red Code 225 was. I was like, I thought it went up a lot when it tripled at NAB from Red 36 to Red 100, but when it went to 225, I thought, this is impossible. And well, in fact, we find out what that...
Yeah, hopefully you found out how the hell we handle that amount of data.
Well, in fact, Red Code 225 is not what you think it is, as you'll hear when the interview comes out later. But before we did that, there was a big Red event in LA. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so look, we have a man on the ground, Michael Scott, who's been there today for that Red press and professionals event today. Not an awful lot come out of it, but it was great to touch base with Michael after he'd been there today. So that was great. None of us could actually get there. A slightly large flight for either of us, so it was glad we could get someone quite local. But so we'll get to Michael in a minute.
Yeah, we really appreciate Michael doing that. And one of the things that Michael managed to do was see almost an hour worth of material projected at Fox's projection suite. So he got to see firsthand the quality of the work that's being done on the current Red One around the world. But a point that Ted made to Michael was, of course, this was all stuff that was shot only at Red Code 36 level at best, as opposed to the much higher resolutions that we're talking about by today's standards. But Jason, when we're back in Sydney together, we have a much sort of more chatty kind of rundown of what's going on. But this week, I think what people really want to hear from is what actually happened at the events. And then, as I say, with Ted, some of the stuff from behind the scenes. So let's cross now to you talking to Michael in Los Angeles and get a feel for what it was like to be there on the day of the big announcement.
Well, fresh from the Red Industry event today is Michael Scott. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Jason.
So how was it? I was a bit envious of you today. Should I have been?
Well, if you've been to a Red event of any kind, you've kind of been to a similar thing as this. It was nothing too different from what we saw at about 2 a.m. my time. I'm not sure what time it was in your neck of the woods, but it was about 2 a.m. my time on Red User when Jim finally cracked and put all that stuff up. But this was more of it seemed like this was more of an industry industry insider type of gathering of people who were very steeped in the Red community in terms of the fact that they're actually using this on significant productions, but at the same time are not necessarily sitting up at 2 a.m. in the morning hitting refresh on a message board.
Right. So was there anything further revealed today that we wouldn't have seen on Red User or on Red on the Red website?
Nothing in particular as pertains to the Scarlett and Epic announcements is pretty much all there. They did mention that Scarlett, the 2/3-inch Scarlett's, will still have a burst mode, which is not on the spec sheet.
Yep.
But the larger Scarlett's and the Epics will not. And they mentioned that Scarlett, Jim mentioned this on Red User a little bit later, but they mentioned that 30 frame per second maximum frame rate on Scarlett is a hard maximum. If you decrease the frame rate or window the sensor or however they're planning to do it, you're not going to get an increase in frame rate the way you do with the Red One and the way you will with the Epic. It's a hard maximum.
Sounds like they won't window them at all then, really. There'd be no point.
Yeah, I don't see why they would if that was the case. And it makes sense. They say it's a limitation of the chip. I don't know if that's true. I'm not an engineer, so we'll just assume it is. But either way, I mean, it makes sense to have a difference between what Scarlett can do and what Epic can do.
Sure. And any further information on the pricing of the accessories?
No, I did ask about that, and they don't have any pricing information on that stuff just yet.
And really nothing further, I suppose, about being able to put your money down.
No, they did ask that. They asked, when and how. I didn't ask that. Someone else asked, and it was kind of vague. They haven't quite figured it out yet, it sounds like, because a lot of it, I think, is going to rely on how quickly they can ramp up production. You know, I think they want to avoid, and this is me speaking speculatively, this is nothing to do with what anything Ted has said or anything, this is just me going off what I've seen. It seems to me that they definitely want to avoid the long rollout that Red One has had. And so it's a question of how quickly they can produce it. So is there still going to be a rollout? Because they've already said Red One owners get first crack at it. So does that mean there's a rollout, or does that just mean that they open the store a month in advance and the Red users get first crack at it? Or it's unclear what that means, and a lot of that will have to do with the first stock that they have.
Sure. And I guess these next few months, as we well know, things are subject to change. Count on it.
Well, yeah. I mean, they might take it down and do this all over again, for all we know, if people are fervent enough. But it sounds like with the DSMC system, they actually don't necessarily need to be as radical about it, because they can basically just say, all right, this module isn't going to be a good seller because everyone has the same kind of criticism of this module, so we can just adjust that criticism, change this module, and leave the rest of it intact, the rest of the plan. So it sounds like things will be subject to change, but starting now, it's going to be on a component by component basis.
Take us through what you saw today, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of people very interested to hear about what went on.
It was on the Fox Studios lot. They had hooked up a Final Cut system to it, and they were going to be playing some video. So Ted welcomed everyone, came down. There were a lot of industry professionals, people who were familiar with Red, had shot with it. He showed the reel, not the was it the IBC reel? Was IBC the most recent one that just happened? Yeah. Okay, so it was the newest reel, so it would have been the IBC reel. I've got to say, I was happy to go, even though a lot of it was just showing footage. I love seeing this stuff on the big screen, because that's kind of feels like the way it's supposed to be seen, you know. And he did make a thing about a lot of the stuff we were seeing was either SR tape, or it was straight up like the ProRes proxies. Like it wasn't a 4K projection, and it still looked fantastic, you know. They showed some footage from Leverage and a couple of other shows that were using it, and talking about the workflow, which was, on a lot of these shows, it sounds like they're just using the ProRes. They're using the proxies, and they're basically not even bothering with an online. They just do the offline, and they've got everything they need. They just transcode to ProRes, and they just go from there. One of the things that wasn't really addressed, and maybe Mike will be talking about it with Ted, is the fact that they're talking about, oh, we're launching 6K and 9K and 28K cameras, but they don't really address how the post side of things is going to work, and it sounds in a lot of ways like they're basically just going, well, we're just going to plop it out there and let them figure it out, because someone will, because that's how it worked with the Red One. Michael from Plaster City was talking about how the processing is getting faster as the builds go on and stuff like that, and we're getting more quality in less time and stuff like that. So they didn't really address it, but that was kind of the moment where it was a projection of confidence that the post side of things will be ready by the time this stuff hits. And then, like I was saying, they showed a 13 minute short film about boxing, and there's this washed up boxer who gets these old gloves, and I guess he got them from the devil or something, because he kills everyone he fights with and stuff like that. But it's an interesting short, and it was shot by the DP of Titanic, but the most interesting part to me about the short was that after about 2 minutes, I forgot that I was there because it was a red short. I just started watching the film, right? And I became interested in it, and I was watching it, and I was examining it as a film. But I basically, until it was over, I completely neglected the fact that I was watching a red film. And I think that is actually one of the best compliments I can probably give it, in that, I mean, I like looking at the footage and being like, wow, this camera is awesome. But at the same time, I like being able to forget that the camera is awesome and just watch what's on the screen. Then he talked about where the red product line was going, which is basically that really big image that's currently on Red's site, like the really long number of sheets just split up into separate slides. They showed some more footage. They showed some footage from Leverage and a couple of other shows that were using it. Mike Filioni, is that his name, from Plaster City,
right?
Post. He's been in a lot of the Red stuff. He got up and talked about the workflow and showed how clean it was to work with Final Cut. And one of the things that wasn't really addressed, and maybe Mike will be talking about it with Ted, is the fact that, you know, they're talking about, oh, we're launching 6K and 9K and 28K cameras, but they don't really address how the post side of things is going to work.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds in a lot of ways like they're basically just going, well, we're just going to plop it out there and let them figure it out, you know, because someone will, because that's how it worked with the Red One. Michael from Plaster City was talking about how processing is getting faster as the builds go on and stuff like that, and we're getting more quality in less time and stuff like that. So they didn't really address it, but that was kind of the moment where it was a projection of confidence that the post side of things will be ready by the time this stuff hits.
Okay, and then it ran into a slideshow, as we pretty much have all seen on the net.
Yeah, it was the same slideshow that we've seen, and nothing explained that isn't on the spec sheet.
Let's get your impressions on the announcements.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, in large part, this is what they said they were going to be doing from the beginning. You know, the whole idea with Red One was that it was going to be this infinitely modular camera, and it wasn't so much. You know, there's a lot locked into that form factor of the body and stuff. I mean, you can build stuff around it, but the camera itself is pretty locked into what it is. It was their first go, and they were still figuring things out. So I don't really begrudge them that. And you know, if it was a step in this direction, then I think it was a good step to take, because it is still a great camera.
Yeah.
But I think the DSMC direction that they've taken with the foreseeable future of their products is definitely the way to go. Yeah, it's infinitely modular. It's infinitely configurable. I mean, they've got a number of like 2 quadrillion some odd configurations. I don't know who calculated that or how, but it's a big number, and it's impressive. Whether it's entirely accurate or not, it doesn't really matter. The idea is there, you know. I think that's great. I think it's great because it's the kind of thing where, you know, I don't necessarily want to buy a new camera every time there's a new monitor. I don't want to buy a new, you know, and when you're dealing with like the HVX, for example, which is a great little camera, and I've had one, you know, for many years, and I've used it on several films. But you know, if there was a better LCD, it's not like I can just pop the one off the HVX that I have and pop the new one on. I've got to buy a new HVX, you know, or if the internal electronics change, et cetera, et cetera. I particularly dislike it when a company will upgrade one aspect of something and they will seem to downgrade another aspect that I thought was working just fine.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like I don't like having to kind of balance things like that and go, oh, well, I want this, but I would lose this. So do I really want to invest in, you know, and whereas with a DSMC thing, I can just go, well, I can keep the rest of this and there's this new thing and I can just plug it in and I don't even have to, you know, I don't even have to change my favorite, you know, standard configuration. It's all basically the same. And it's presumably going to work that way from here on out.
Well, it's early days, obviously. I'm still getting my head around all the combinations, but can you see a camera in there for you?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, first I have to see what all the accessories are, of course, but that's not even really true because ultimately the whole point is they're the same accessories no matter what brain you put in it. Right, so I figure out what my favorite accessories are, but the question is, what's the camera? And for me, it seems like you said, it's still early days, but it looks like I would probably go with the 5K Scarlett as my baseline to own.
Yeah,
it's at a good price point. It's Super 35, so it works with, you know, cine lenses and stuff like that. With, of course, a swappable lens mount and all of that. But I think that would be good for me just as a personal camera when I want to go out and shoot something and not spend a lot of money on a camera kit, you know, because I've invested in my own camera kit. But for bigger projects, you know, if I'm working on something where I need high speed or I fingers crossed I eventually get a big enough budget that I can be like Christopher Nolan and shoot in IMAX, you know, I can rent the Epic, you know, the 6K Epic or the 645 or the 617, I guess. I don't know why, I feel like you could shoot an entire movie on a tripod with that thing and then just cut in what you want and you just have all your angles that way because that thing is ridiculous. But you know, so I think that's what's going to happen a lot. I think people are going to buy small and rent big, and again, the DSMC system will allow them to do that without really altering the way they work either on set or in post.
Right. Well, and also it makes sense for you. I mean, you've already got drives, batteries, LCDs, and all that sort of stuff. So really,
yeah, they were talking about that. Or Ted was talking about that. They're really going to make their best effort to port all of those accessories over to the next, particularly the electronics accessories, the drives, the batteries, stuff like that. If it's something like the, you know, the universal mount for. But what is it? It's like $100. They're not going to be too bothered if they have to reconfigure the thing and that universal mount will no longer fit. It's like, well, sorry, but it was $100. But the LCDs and the EVFs and stuff like that you've paid $5, $6, $7 or several thousand dollars for, they're going to be very focused on making their best effort to either make sure it works with the new system or strike some kind of compromise with their customers, which they've been very good with doing in the past.
Yeah, well, I think what this lets them do is give their new customers the same level of upgrades they've been giving the Red One customers without having to ship cameras backwards and forwards. They can just do it modularly if you know.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And it's funny, I was saying that the HDMI port on my Red is kind of a little fritzy, but that means to send it back and get it fixed, I have to be out the camera,
exactly,
you know, for a week or more. Whereas with the DSMC, I just send I send the IO thing back to them and maybe rent one of those. And that would be cheap because it's just a component, cheap relative to a full camera, you know, kit. And you can, there's less downtime for little problems like that.
Yeah, no, it makes sense from a lot of points of view. I think maybe where it doesn't make quite so much sense is in the bottom end of the Scarlett's, where you got a 3K camera for $2,500, but then if you've got no accessories to your name whatsoever, you're going to be up for another, you know, you're going to be doubling the price of your camera to get batteries, grips, LCDs, drives.
Right.
You know, so.
Right, yeah, they've definitely. It looks like they've definitely, even with the fixed lens Scarlett that they're talking about, it seems like they've definitely kind of dropped the idea that this is going to be an HV20 killer. You know,
yeah.
This is not going to be a camera you buy and it's one solid package out of the box and you're going to film your kids' soccer games with, as they were saying. You know, it was the soccer mom camera. I don't get the sense that it's that anymore.
Yeah, it's still very modular. It's lost a lot of the stuff it was going to have, flip out LCD monitors and displays on it. It's and you know, still could be an HVX 200 killer. Depends on what the price is going to be. So clearly, none of that was mentioned today.
Yeah, they were saying with the fixed the fixed lens Scarlett, Ted was saying that you know, it's a they're still trying to figure out how much that lens is going to cost them, basically. Yeah. So, but I don't see that being 3K for 3K anymore, considering that the Scarlett without a lens is $2,500, and I don't think that lens is a $500 lens. It looks like they're going for a pretty high quality lens. I think 3K for 3K is no longer on the marketing slogan.
So, one last question: all of these announcements make the Red One look pretty outdated already.
Right.
I'm sure there was no mention of a timeline for that camera.
I definitely agree, and they're not going to phase it out intentionally in terms of support. They're going to support it as long as people are still using it, but no mention was made of that. Which is good, because one of the problems with the original Epic and Scarlett announcements was that I personally felt like there was too much overlap between them, and I was like, I kind of see why I would get a Scarlett, but I don't really see why I would get an Epic if I've already got a Red. And they've made the delineation a lot clearer in both directions.
Yeah, well, one thing's clear: we've got plenty of time to think about it.
Yeah, and plenty of time to speculate and talk about it, I'm sure.
Yeah, we get a few more podcasts out of this.
Michael loved that, yeah.
Okay, well, look, fantastic, Michael. Thanks for your time today.
I'm glad you
can go on our behalf. We'll have a big round table once the dust settles, I think.
Awesome, that'd be phenomenal.
Great, all right. Cheers, mate.
All right, thanks, bye.
Actually, one of the really great things about Michael being at that event, Jason, is that he has his own Red camera. So he's, you know, obviously a very informed individual when it comes to this sort of stuff. So that was great he could do that for us.
Yeah, look, there's a few insights from... it's good to get insights from someone who actually has the gear and can sort of work out the good and bad, really. Because there is good and bad with all of these announcements, I think.
So if that was a user's point of view, I got to speak to Ted, and I've got to say, it was terribly generous of him to talk to us, because he'd done a lot of this big presentation stuff, but we managed to get some one-on-one time. We'd actually organised with him, gosh, weeks ago now, and it was really, really kind of him. But when I spoke to him, it was at the end of this day that had started at about 1 o'clock in the morning with the breaking news, which I know you were staying up for, and I was certainly up here at sort of 2:30 in the morning in New Zealand for.
Yeah, it was quite wild, especially on Twitter and the web and the whole combination of the whole new media thing. It was quite wild to see it slowly going from slowly unveiled little glimpses here and there to an absolute torrent of pictures culminating in the full whack, even before the countdown had even finished.
Hey, just tell me, before we'll get into this next time we're in the studio together, but just out of the major camera bodies, or the brains as they like to call them, which one's your sweet spot, personally?
Oh, look, I think probably because I'm not coming at it from someone who's going to buy it, someone who's maybe going to be able to know that I'm going to be able to rent it at some stage, I'm just slobbering all over the 645 Monstro to be able to have, in such a small, compact body, be able to have medium format, like big Mamiya lenses and big medium format depth of field. It's just outstanding. It's like having 70mm reborn. I can't wait. They can't build fast enough for me.
Oh, really? I was favouring the FF35. Again, it has the same chip as the 645 that you were talking about, though I was going for it, apart from the fact that it's $10,000 cheaper, and quite frankly, I am going to be paying for it.
Absolutely. That's probably the next step down. It's a massive step up from the Super 35 we've known. When you look at the size of the size of a sensor from Super 35 to full-frame 35, and you realise the difference between a full SLR camera and motion feature film. There's a massive difference, and just going to be even that alone is a fantastic jump in depth of field and gorgeous. I can't either of them. We found fantastic.
I guess what I liked about the Epic in this range is we have. Both of those two models that we outlined have the 13 stops of latitude, which I certainly really appreciate. But I liked the one that I flagged because it has Canon mount or Nikon mount. And as we'll hear in a moment when I talk to Ted, they aren't actually field changeable in the sense that while in the middle of a shoot, you'd swap the mounts. But
right.
Certainly for any shoot, you could swap the mount. So if you wanted to do a shoot and use Canon mounts, then you'd be able to. Though, as we'll hear in the interview, haven't quite nailed whether or not they'll use the electronics of Canon and Nikon to drive things like the focus and stuff, but of course the red lenses, the red electronic lenses that use the red mount, will be electronic lenses that do have that kind of technology we haven't actually seen up until now in Red's sort of bag of tricks, have we? All the lenses
well,
up until
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I did wonder when we started to sort of theorize about whether we were going to have Nikon mounts or Canon mounts, how they would be able to sort of get around the whole. There'd be so much proprietary electronics involved in driving a Canon or a Nikon focus lenses and how the electronics work. And clearly, you know, one of the ways around it, and I'm not necessarily around it, but why not, hey, just invent, you know, go for your own system.
Yeah, well, I guess the other problem I'm going to have is that the one that you flagged, the 645, is aimed for spring 2010. And I'd prefer to take winter 2009 and beat you by a couple of seasons and save the 10 grand. But either way, let's have a knockdown battle about that, because I know that our good friend Stu has flagged that his perfect camera would actually be a 3K camera that shoots like about 120 frames, though he wants the higher red code to obviously get, you know, better quality. And
I am with him there. One of what sort of highs and lows of this is amazing. I just hope to get out of this now with a camera that I knew I could rent for shoots, but also a little, you know, personal all-rounder for me to buy, and that would be the DSLR killer, and also be something that I could, you know, shoot some personal projects on. And he's kind of gone through the menu and cherry picked a system which obviously doesn't exist, and I'm kind of with him there.
Well, now you say that it doesn't exist, but wait till you hear this interview, because we get some of the way there in the end of the discussion that we have with Ted. In fact, we might play that now if that's all right with you.
Yeah, okay, let's do it.
Firstly, let's start with that huge 28K Epic. You said it shoots 25 frames.
You want to start digging work way down. I like that idea.
I guess the number one question on everyone's lips is, who's that camera aimed at? Who do you expect to use that camera?
Well, you know, I think the market will determine what really gets useful. There is one camera on the market, a Swiss camera, that sort of does this today a little bit. It's able to capture one frame a second at that giant size frame rate, and it's used for giant panoramic views, essentially things where you're taking very slow-moving images. You know, everybody stands still, we're going to take a picture for one second here. Giant vistas of, say, the Grand Canyon or, you know, giant nature photography, right, for still images. But what we're doing, which is so dramatic, is we're able to turn this into a motion camera as well as a still camera. So if you think about at the largest end of the scale, what used to be considered ultra exotic, insanely exotic, like no one would ever own or use this camera. If you look at what Red's done from the very beginning, we took exotic and we made it accessible to a lot of people. So a couple of years ago, people sort of looked and said, well, 4K, who's going to use this 4K camera? You know, it's going to be hard to post. It's going to be hard to manipulate. And we said, not really. It's going to be small. And it's going to be self-contained. And it's going to be like shooting motion picture film without the film. Just a couple of years later, it's now fairly commonplace, right? You've got thousands of these cameras in well over 60 countries all around the world shooting hundreds of feature films and commercials and TV and you name it. So if you look at driving that forward, taking the technology that the Red One was built on and that spirit of innovation, pushing it out into how far can we actually take this? Well, because of the sensor program, because of this Mysterium sensor program, of which we're talking about three generations now, we're talking about the original Mysterium, Mysterium X, and then Mysterium Monstro, third generation sensor, which gets us up to a 16-bit world and 16 stops of dynamic range is where we're targeted.
How many stops on the high end 28K?
We're targeting 13 stops. That's the goal. And of course, you know, everything is always engineering based.
But on a camera like that, you know, and we understand that everything is subject to change as it gets closer to shipping, but on the camera like that, are we going to see ultra-low depth of field? Like, we get less depth of field when we go to IMAX. Why wouldn't I get, you know, like half a eyelash depth of field when I go to that 617?
You know, that's a good question. I'd probably best leave that to the photographers that actually use these ultra-high style type cameras, these panoramic cameras. They're mostly designed, obviously, with very, very wide lenses in mind. So they capture the world, per se. They're not designed for sort of close-up photography, right, where you're looking for short, selected depth of field. These cameras are looking to capture everything. So what I've talked to people in the industry today and last night, what they're really excited about is if you look at, say, our 645 camera and the 617 camera, the medium body, the medium format, and then this ultra large format, they're looking at this as a true replacement to the last sort of holdouts of when you would use film for these ultra large format X shots like VistaVision and then the IMAX world. So that's kind of where this all fits into.
Yeah. But I mean, in a reasonably, let's not be blunt about it. You're not going to make much money out of that camera because you're just not going to sell that many of them. The world's going to love you for making them, but you're not going to sell a bunch of them. You couldn't
I don't even know if I would sort of pre-predict that. I think, you know, typically the average probably sale price for a Red package from Red, the body is about $18,000. A typical package, say $30,000 to $35,000. We've sold thousands and thousands of those cameras at the price point. So it's kind of a renaissance of owner-operators owning their own gear and using their own gear. And that's actually part of why we do the Scarlett and Epic program the way we have launched it now, to basically use everything as we keep growing and changing the project, all the accessories and all the pieces and parts, and a lot will carry over from the Red One that will be able to be used on these new cameras as well.
Okay, so let's move down to the more high-end cameras, which are the Epic range, and they're obviously all professional cameras, but Epic is a good place to be. And one of the areas that hasn't been discussed a lot is audio through the Epic line. What's happening with audio?
So if you look at the way that the system breaks out, there's this I/O module. So the camera itself can be configured in sort of a digital still style operation mode or a motion picture operation mode, and you grow the camera deeper at these modules. The important module for audio and video is this I/O module, which has XLRs for audio and video ports. Now, you're just looking at, you know, early stage stuff, so the final specs aren't really locked in yet, but let's say safely between 2 and 4 channels of audio, depending on the I/O configuration that you choose and we end up with. And that you add on as needed. So in some cases, if you're doing an MOS shoot, you don't need audio. You don't have to bring any of that stuff along with you. You can just leave that at home or you leave that in your kit. Whereas with most cameras, you know, you're tagging all this baggage along with you, whether you need it or not. The whole idea of this modular concept is you attach the modules that you need to get the job done.
So this benefit of design, I mean, there are obviously sort of spectacular things being announced today, such as the 28K. But it's fair to say that probably, you know, there was a good amount of stuff announced about sensors at NAB. So the biggest impact, perhaps, could be argued, is the modular design and the more modular nature of the two cameras.
Right. This DSMC concept, digital still and motion camera concept, where what I like to say is the collision of these two worlds is really happening right in front of our eyes, and people can think about how they're capturing images in a different way than maybe they did yesterday or, you know, 24 hours ago, where digital still cameras were doing what they were doing, motion picture cameras were doing what they were doing, and you would see some level of crossover, you know, as sort of this sidecar effect of some of these modern digital SLRs that are doing these highly compressed HD movies on their big sensors, you know, reflex sensors. But in our world, we see it as a true hybrid, meaning you're shooting motion and you're shooting still, and you can use that for either purpose. So think about you as a sports photographer or a nature photographer, right?
So let's discuss that, because if we are talking about the photography aspects of this, central to technology in Nikon and Canon is exposure and autofocus technology, of which we've seen none up until now from Red. is this right. technology and you're going to bring in?
I have seen some announcements. I'm sorry, say again?
Well, is this technology that you're moving into, or are you expecting to put Canon, Nikon lenses on and use the electronics in the lenses that have come from those companies?
So we don't have any specifics about where we're going to head with Canon and Nikon in terms of supporting their electronics. But what we are talking about now, which you can sort of lead into all the logic of where it makes sense, is we're talking about a red mount lens now, which is an electronic mount that will go to, you know, our full frame 35 and our F35 style cameras that will function in that way. So you'll be able to control things in a similar way that you control a digital still, as well as a cinema camera, where everything will be full manual control. So you'll have both. So that's all tied into this red mount.
Yep. In the Epic range, when we have the brochure discussing the fact that there's red mount, PL mount, Canon mount, and Nikon mount, are these field changeable mounts, or are these factory fitted mount options?
The goal is to be, you know, field changeable is a little bit of a dangerous word, because it means that you can sort of change them on the fly at a moment's notice, which I would be a little careful with that language to try and, I don't want to make this sort of seem too good to be true, in the sense that everything, when we talk about removing a mount and replacing a mount, even today we had one precise operation, it doesn't mean that you can't do it yourself, but we want people to take care and understand this is not something you're going to do 10 times a day. This is not something you do in an uncontrolled environment, like while you're driving in a van on the Outback, right? You're going to want to do this in a very stable, clean environment with the right tools and the right level of expertise. So that's the big caveat from an understanding of how you treat these professional tools. But the overarching answer is yes, the design of this is that these are user-replaceable mounts that can be swapped out.
Okay, now the astonishing thing on the Epic line is the Redcode 225. We thought it was pretty cool when it tripled from 36 up to like 100 at NAB, but yep. This is doubled and a bit again. What does that imply for not only signal-to-noise ratio, but actually the storage options are going to be required, because we're now talking about, you know, higher frame sizes at higher data rates?
Right. So the way I can sort of best explain this, and this actually gets a little tricky, so this may be hard to sort of explain interview style. It'll take a little more in-depth discussion. But just to give you an example, today when we were screening a lot of material at Fox, we were screening all different types of footage, and I made the point of making sure that everybody was aware on these big screens that we were screening on that everything they saw so far is either Redcode 28 or Redcode 36. And as we advance everything with our program, the codec logic and the codec science advances quite significantly as well, right? So on the Scarlett range, we're now at Redcode 42. And at the Epic range, we move to 225. But it's a little more complex number because it has to do with the maximum resolution, which you can achieve with these cameras, in tandem with the maximum frame rate, right? So that 225 is not sort of a simple just one-step compression ratio. It's not going to mean ultimately that anymore. It's sort of a different kind of number than it was with the Red One, which is sort of simpler to understand. And like I said, I'm not trying to sort of blow off the answer, but I'm just sort of positioning what it means to us.
If it was capacity on a backplane per second, then obviously as the frame rate goes up, you're right. Not having to compromise on the frame size to get through the same pipe.
You got it.
So would it be fair to say, though, that in terms of image quality, not that we're using the numbers, but the idea at NAB was you were tripling the kind of capacity and you had more storage per frame allocated, so you had higher quality. Has that number shifted significantly, or is it just a combination of that number and frame rate?
You're exactly right. It's a combination of that logic of number and these massive frame rates and massive sensor sizes that pushed this number up. And what we described today in these big long sessions was the logic of us riding through the technology curve of what storage is doing as it's getting smaller and faster in these different form factors with these different SSD modules and the ability to tie these together in different ways to still keep our mission of onboard recording as a goal, right? So we don't want to be tethered to these big boxes. That's not what Red is all about. The idea is digital filmmaking, so you're shooting in a self-contained mode. And part of that modularity on Scarlett and Epic is if you look at Red 1, while the CF module was a module, it was pretty hard attached to the camera. You can't shoot without it, right? In Epic and Scarlett, it's truly modular, meaning you can swap these things out wholesale as new technology comes into play. So this is something we're going to sort of see. And if you recall back in the Red 1 days when we first announced and in the early shipping days, we hadn't really figured out all the different storage options. Just, you know, let's say in the last month, really, the flash module in the Red Drive sort of carrier style has just come online. So we're going to keep riding that technology curve forward.
Let me ask you another couple of quick questions about stills before we move down to the Scarlett range. The thing that every professional stills guy I know does is hook up a flash. You know, it's like flash photography at the professional end is everything. And, of course, right. This begs the question about rolling shutter. Where's the collision of CMOS rolling shutter technology and the flash nature of professional photography? Because if somebody's spending, you know, this kind of money on a camera and wants to do stills with it, they're going to want to use a flash.
So, you know, as we advance our sensor technology, the readout times get faster and better. This is something I actually don't really have a hard answer for you on today as to how that's going to be affected, but just know that there's a high awareness and a very high understanding of how people use still cameras today, and these digital still cameras that, of course, do have CMOS sensors in them, and how they're compensated for. So that's all part of the processing in these brains that become Epic and Scarlett. Sort of know that we have a very high awareness of what that means from a digital still, professional digital still level, and we'll address that as we get closer to the end game. You know, this is just our initial announcement of this technology, so we haven't really crafted answers and figured out all the pieces and parts that we're going to talk about, but with an understanding of that, you know, there's a staff that's very aware of the digital still world. My actual world lives much more on the cinema side of technology. So even as we start crafting the logic that I think about our tool as, I actually have to learn a lot more about still photography because I come from my whole career as motion, right? So as I look at all the different sensor sizes, when I think of the medium format camera, the 645, I think Vista Vision. And when I think of the 617, I think Ultra IMAX, right? When you talk to my partner in crime, who will be starting to do a lot more talking about the other side of our operation, that's John Saget, and you know it'd be probably good for you to talk to him as well because he'll have much more logic and refinement on the digital still world because that's where he came from his whole career. So we're going to sort of wear two hats and two helmets in this world in terms of me sort of continuing to drive on the motion side, which I've done my whole life, and John Saget on the still side.
Yeah, and obviously as the market expands, you're going to be kept pretty darn busy, so a bit of help I'm sure wouldn't go astray.
I've got to tell you, it was pretty interesting the last couple of days trying to wrap my head around all of these concepts and all of these cameras, right? Because the Red One device, that does all these remarkable things, and now we've got 8 different varieties of camera bodies. The beauty of it all is they all fit into one modular system. So as complex as it might seem from the first blush as you look at all these different options, it's really not. It's just sort of you pick a body, you know the resolution that you want to achieve to get through the day, and you sort of pick the type of resolution that's going to fit your style of photography. And when I talk about photography, I'm talking about sort of this new age of photography, which means it could be motion one day, it could be stills another day as the primary objective, but you're always shooting both.
Yeah, the only thing is, though, that in fairness to that comment, there is a huge caveat on that, which is lenses. Mm-hmm. Because up until now, one of the huge points about Red One is the fact that, you know, we'd throw on a S4, we'd throw on a, you know, whatever lens we liked, in addition to, you know, happily using the Red lenses. Mm-hmm. Will the Red mount format be proprietary, or would Cook be able to make a Red mount lens, or is that going to be only Red provided?
Yeah, that's probably not a day one question because that's probably something we haven't really wrapped our head around. I think a lot of what we do is dictated by market demand and by market desire, and of course you've been a big part of that, right? Sort of raising the call and always contributing from a logic standpoint of it sure would be great if you guys focused on this a little more, focused on this a little less, pushed it. And our user community actually dictates what their needs are. So the first step in this evolution is to say we have a very strong knowledge that if we're going to build our own mount, we have to have our own selection of lenses that are going to cover everything, right? That are going to cover medium format, are going to cover, like, for example, this Red Mini mount, which actually works with the 2/3 inch Scarlett, and there's going to be a set of primes that are going to be very small, similar to sort of like a C-mount style lens. Very, very small lenses, but a full set of primes from very wide, like a 6.5 mil, I think, all the way up to 75 millimeter for telephoto. So we have a very good awareness that we need to pay attention to all these markets. And then we'll sort of let the industry tell us what they want and what they need, and we'll make the decisions accordingly. So the answer is probably up to all the manufacturers.
Let me ask you one quick question on the before we hit Scarlett, which is you obviously as a company love doing 3D renderings of what these things are going to look like, and then take great delight in cutting odd angles on them and posting them on RedUser, which is mm-hmm. fine. But it does beg the question: when will we see a price list on some of these gorgeous other modular sections, other than the brains,
right.
which of course
you have
published indicative pricing on?
As you might imagine, launching this level of product integration in this way, we had our hands full just getting all the specs to where we wanted to be able to present them to the world, and all the logic of the bodies and what we could price out. You notice even the Scarlett with the fixed lens, is the price is to be determined, right? We put a price of $2,500 on the Scarlett with the removable lens, with the multiple lens mount changeable. But we actually don't even have a fixed price other than what I was explaining today is the logic of $2,500 without the lens, and you can sort of extrapolate to where we're going to have stone. We just didn't want to pre-predict this because we're still working on what it's going to be. So in terms of all the accessories in the IO model, we're all going to get to take a little bit of a deep breath, digest what we've announced to the world, which is a fair amount and it's very significant. And then, in the next cycle, which could be weeks, could be, months, but probably will be weeks, we will start to figure out the rest of the system beyond just here's the specs and here's the logic and here's what we think all this stuff's going to cost, so people can start to price out a system, as it were, and not just the body itself.
Because a lot of people said that one of the really appealing things was the first thing you said day one of NAB 2008, which was, 3K for $3,000. Mm-hmm. And that really stuck with a lot of people, especially what I call the HVX200 market. I know you're not aimed at one particular product, but I'm just saying in that kind of pro-consumer end, three for three was a real catchphrase.
A good buzzword.
Do you feel that you're still in that zone?
I think we're still in that zone. I think it's just a little too early to predict. The lens itself is a very, very sophisticated piece of technology, and it's, the fixed lens Scarlett is not something that we're cutting corners on, and that's really the important takeaway here, is it's going to be right, and it's going to be at the right price, and it'll be hyper-competitive. I guess the thing that I would look at is if you compare the Scarlett to other cameras that are sort of playing in that same zone with 2/3 inch professional-level sensors, you're talking about devices that are expensive. $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 US dollars. And we have announced the price of the Scarlett body, the 3K Scarlett body for $2,500. So all I'm saying is use your best logic, extrapolate, try not to pin us too far down so that we don't commit to something that wouldn't be the right product. Everything is about finding the right product at the right price for us.
Sure.
I think we'll get there.
Sure.
I think have a little faith and let the people that are listening to this know that we have your best interests at heart, and you can look at the $2,500 price tag without the lens and sort of extrapolate accordingly. It won't be too far of a stretch.
One of the great advantages of having a fixed lens is the ability to have very exact calibration between the lenses when doing stereoscopic work. I guess I have two questions for you. The Oh By The Way 3D, mm-hmm. is that assuming a fixed lens? Because there are a lot of advantages in having fixed lenses for stereoscopic work. Or is that assuming any configuration of red camera in 3D configuration?
I don't think it's really assuming anything other than if you look at the body style, let's start with the body style before we get to the optics. Longer rather than wider initially gave us that moment of inspiration to this is going to be the perfect 3D tool, whether you use Scarlett bodies or Epic bodies, and the ability to put very small lenses on it to get that intraocular nice and tight without having to use a mirror rig, you know, a reflex rig, do that.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. Yeah. Absolutely huge.
So, you know, you can take this camera out and shoot it like a little handheld camera, right? And you're shooting 3D.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, the big win from an industrial design standpoint. In terms of what I see creatively already being done with Red Ones in 3D, using zoom lenses and these, you know, super creative tool guys. I mean, one of the guys was at the studios with us tonight that is experimenting a lot with 3D, shooting sports with 3D, shot the X Games with 10 Red cameras in 3D in Los Angeles a couple of months ago, is prepping to shoot a bunch of underwater 3D, right? So I don't think there's really any limitations on you have to always use fixed lenses because you're very precise intraocular and you know, setting zooms and stuff to nail it. The tools become much more creative when you're able to hand them a tool set that doesn't weigh a couple hundred pounds and have to be hauled around in a very unwieldy fashion. So I understand, you know, the technology side of locking fixed lenses so you get the exact same millimeters for the intraocular and the landing of the 3D. So, you know, your overall answer is yes, probably the bulk of 3D work will be done with lenses. Fixed focal length lenses, right? But the idea of being able to pop.
No, I actually meant, what I actually meant was that there's a tremendous advantage. Well, put it this way, both work, mm-hmm. right? Obviously both work, but there's a tremendous advantage in the engineering of it if they're your fixed lenses, because then you have the ability to, you know, presumably make sure that you can zoom both of them at the same amount and keep them in sync,
sure.
Up and down the stereoscopic split. But, I mean, either what you're saying is it's not – that rig at the end is not intended to be like a one-off that only works with one type of the modular array under current planning. You're saying that that's designed to work with
– right, yeah.
Okay, so let's hit Scarlett a little harder. And obviously there's an enormous amount of interest in people being able to get into the cameras. And I guess a question we've really got, for start, is that obviously you've announced Red One plans to migrate people to these mm-hmm. cameras. Does that apply to the camera? If somebody was to buy a Red One from somebody else right now, because obviously, you know, parts of the world are suffering economically and somebody might want to offload mm-hmm. a camera, is it a camera based or is it original purchase only, those deals that you've announced to get into?
That's one of those late night brain questions, which I'm probably better off handing off to the sales team to make sure. What I can say is that for anyone that owns a Red One, you know, you're going to be able to migrate up and get that 17.5 off the price of an Epic. So that's a pretty good deal. And if you want to keep your Red One, you get a 12% discount on a Scarlett if you want to go that route. So we're trying to be very flexible and support the people that supported us early on, like you, for example, that took the risk with us and made us successful at this stage. The goal is to always support and look out for our early customers, of which there are thousands all over the world, in a way that we haven't announced any sales plans yet for how we're going to take orders or when we're going to take orders for these products. It's still a little early on for that. But when we do, you can know for sure that if you have a Red One, you're in better shape than someone that wants an Epic or a Scarlett and doesn't have a Red One. You will get priority on that. In terms of the answer, on the question of what happens to the secondary market, I'm best leading that to the sales team.
Sure. Is it the sense that these will perform in normal respects like the current? I mean, for example, a 5,000 daylight kind of balanced mm-hmm. 320 ASA. Is there anything there that is of surprise in terms of ISO ratings or
nothing that we can announce yet because we're still in the early test phases, right? We do have sample sensors that we're testing in the lab and making images and proving things out. And when we're really ready and comfortable to say, here's where we sit from an ASA/ISO rating, we'll put that information out. The intention is always to improve on our current world. So as we sit 320 ASA, as we measure it on the Red One, the intention is to improve every parameter with Mysterium X and then, of course, Mysterium Monstro. The biggest thing is working towards the extended dynamic range. So that
the extended dynamic range is absolutely magnificent. I guess it's just that when you introduce the digital SLR component, that angle of the product, you do bring with it the joy that community has with very high ISO, like low noise at very, very high
2000 ISO
we've seen in Nikon and Canon.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that 1600 sort of stuff doesn't really hit the motion picture market. Nobody's kind of hitting you over the head saying, I want really low noise 1600. But, of course, the stills guys
right.
will.
You might be surprised at how many people are really wanting to shoot super low light with red ones. And, of course, we say, if you want to shoot with really existing in nighttime scenes, just street lights or existing moonlight kind of stuff, then, get the fastest lenses on the planet. Go with Master Primes or Super Speeds and know that you've got a lot of room to work this stuff with proper grading tools that you're going to get pretty spectacular images. We've seen amazing images with incredibly low light levels. I know you shot some stuff as well and proved it out. So I think we're heading in that direction.
Just one thing on that stills format though. You also, as much as you inherit that expectation on ISO and stuff, you also inherit the fact that, I want to get my stills into Lightroom. I want to get my stills into Aperture.
Right.
Now you've got a very good working relationship with Adobe and Apple. Can we assume that that will extend into whatever format your stills are taken in, in a standard sense?
I think that's a very smart assumption. I think that because if you look at our whole program driving off this Redcode technology, so every camera that we announced in the last 24 hours is all about Redcode. And Redcode is the core of this company. I mean, the sensor technology and function technology that we do with the RAW is absolutely who we are as a company. So the fact that we already have this exceptionally good working relationship with Apple that started from day zero on Redcode, we actually demonstrated tonight the next level of that integration with the native color workflow that's coming up pretty soon, as we're sort of in the final stages of getting that out of the world with Apple. Redcode is Redcode, right? And we'll see some things. I can't speak for Apple. I'll let them speak for themselves on this. But to be sure, they've already supported Redcode within the Apple suite through the QuickTime integration and all that drives there. So I think you can make some assumptions. And certainly with Adobe supporting their whole RAW concept and coming on board in a very big way with the Red One support, you can certainly extrapolate again, without me locking anybody into anything, let them say what they want to say. But everybody's pretty excited about Redcode and the future of Redcode.
And Jim's put out some comments about Scarlett having limited format options in comparison to, say, Red One or Epic, and that makes sense. My question is, has the burst mode gone away that we heard about at NAB? I hear that it hasn't.
It certainly hasn't on the 3K models. On the Scarlett fixed lens and the Scarlett interchangeable lens, 1 to 120 frames in its normal mode, and then the goal bursting back then at 180. And, of course, we'll see where we end up. Now it's all about these are the goal specs, and then we test and prove what we need to achieve, right, and go from there. As we move up the food chain to those larger sensors, the 5K and 6K sensors in the Scarlett domain, so F35 and full frame 35, one of the limitations, if you would even call it a limitation, is that we're talking 1 to 30 frames, regardless of what window level, even full sensor, or you window down to, say, 4K or 3K. Those cameras are designed to be motion/still, but not high speed variety cameras, right? So you're getting for these raising price points for what you're talking about, a camera that can hit the sweet spot of cinema shooting. So it can definitely act like a cinema camera at 5K or 6K, a significantly higher resolution than the Red One for a lower price point. The only sort of give to get is we're talking stills that you're going to pull out from 30 frames on down and motion 30 frames on down. So if you need high speed shots, then you're going to use an F for that, or today you're going to use a Red One for that.
Tell me, with the stuff that's happening with the stills cameras, I think this is not related to the stills cameras, but I've not been able to find it on the net, but I was told by somebody that they thought you'd intended to have the boot up time of the cameras dramatically faster, which of course would be influential, sorry, important to the stills guys. Is that
absolutely
true?
One of the, again, one of the sort of, you know, I use the word limitation in a very guarded way, because for what you get out of the Red One, nothing's really a limitation for the price performance curve. But one of the frustrations with the Red One, because of its first generation design concept and limitations, is you're talking a boot time of, you know, around a minute. In the new designs for these new cameras, for Scarlett and Epic, we're just talking a couple of seconds or less. So boot up time is almost instantaneous is the goal.
So let me just shift now from the individual cameras to a sort of a global view on the company. And I want to suggest this to you, that a year ago, if you'd said Red to somebody, that was synonymous with 4K. Mm-hmm. 4K and Red were two numbers and words that were locked in my mind anyway. Of course, that led to the discussion about Red Ray, 4K monitors and 4K projectors. Mm-hmm. But Red is no longer a 4K camera company, because it's now a 3K, 9K, 6K, 3K. Right. Does 4K hold any significance anymore in terms of the company? Is 4K, you know, is the idea of doing a 4K projection system or a 4K monitor, anything like that, have they left the table?
Well, I guess here's the way that I like to look at it. I mean, you've seen me talk around the world and you know, give these presentations and present our logic. And from the very beginning, from, you know, the first days of talking about Red, we always talked about what the Red One as a 4K device was a digital still camera that shoots movies. It had very little correlation to a traditional video camera other than these video ports out, right? So we tracked along that similar pathway as what digital still cameras were doing, where you look a couple of years ago at what were considered the highest end professional resolutions for a digital still camera, and now they're absolutely dwarfed by today's digital still cameras and will be dwarfed again tomorrow. So for us, the 4K for Red One was that moment in time and what we could produce with that technology at that moment in time. Now we leapfrog well past it to a point where we look at the more resolution we can achieve means the more options you have for what you net it down to for delivery, right? Same as with digital still. The digital still camera you own today and the megapixel count on it versus what you had a few years ago and how much more you can do with it, what, you know, flexibility. The places you could put it. You could put it up to a big billboard. You could put it up to giant prints. You could put it on the web, right? So it's completely flexible based on this ultra-high pixel count. Same logic applies with us, except we cross this bridge between motion and stills all the time now. So 4K is certainly important as the moniker of the company for its first product. It was important that we were demonstrating that HD for us is this sort of downstream effect, a delivery mechanism, not an acquisition mechanism. We're always above HD for acquisition, even in our new entry-level camera, which is the 3K varieties, 2.5 times HD, right, in the 1080p variety. So that's the sort of important concept, is high resolution is where our head is at. And we don't like to limit it by one format or one delivery option. It's just you shoot the best you can, which gives you the most delivery options across the board.
But 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, at NAB, you said that in the general planning of the company, 4K projectors, 4K mm-hmm. monitors were on the table. Are they no longer?
No, they're
on
still
table?
On the table. The Red Ray is still in development as a 4K delivery device. 4K projection is something that's still in development. You know, our lab is sort of wide and deep, and we've got a lot of people working on a lot of stuff. Just because we're not cheerleading about it at the current time doesn't mean by any case that it's not on the table. What it does mean is that we're always altering that technology. So new developments on the camera side mean new developments on the joy side as well. And it's a great big world out there. You know, it's nice that we can work with companies that produce 4K projectors. Like, we seem to have this marvelous relationship with on that side, because they need 4K content, and they're screening our stuff all over the world now. You know, these 4K screens with 4K projectors with marvelous results. But that doesn't mean by any means that we're stopping our development on our pathway, which we like to say is pretty radical and pretty forward thinking. So anything we've mentioned in the past, is somewhere in development at some stage. We just don't, you know, talk about everything, or else just think about how long we've been talking tonight just on Epic and Scarlet and a little bit of this. Could you imagine if we talked about everything
sure.
that's in development?
So just to finish up, we've just bring it home for current Red users, the people that are obviously already invested heavily in the company. You've now finished back orders, providing you're basically caught
yeah.
up with Red
yeah,
One.
Some pretty significant times, even before these announcements, that we're relatively on-demand shipping company now. That if you want a Red One today, you put an order in, and within a short lead time, you know, just to cycle the paperwork and the processing and prep a camera, you get a camera, which is pretty exciting for a lot of people that have called, you know, for the past year and said, gosh, we really want cameras. We really need cameras. We've held very close to that line of, you know, we have an order system, and when the order comes up, you'll get your camera. And people have been happy that we've done that in a very democratic fashion. So now we're pretty much through the list, which is pretty exciting.
Were there a lot of people in the queues who put their hand up and then didn't convert to getting a camera? I mean, were there sort of placeholders in your queue?
Not that many. You know, I mean, there's probably a certain percentage. I don't really keep track of it just because I was sort of too busy doing all the other parts of it. But I guess you could say the conversion rate of people that wanted a Red at the beginning and got a Red is extraordinarily high. There are a huge amount of these cameras out in the world. I think surprising every other manufacturer for the demand for a super high resolution camera, 4K camera, released it, we've been quite successful, sold thousands of cameras.
Yes, quite successful is an understatement, actually. And at the other end of the spectrum at NAB, you mentioned soccer mums, and one would not be remiss in noticing the fact that one of your significant founding kind of guys, as in Jim, comes from a, you know, consumer background. Uh-huh. So there's always been in the wings this sort of sense of you moving to a broader consumer market. Is a soccer mum someone, metaphorically speaking, you're still interested in talking to, or is that sort of still down the track?
Yeah, no, most definitely interested in talking to. In fact, I want to find out where the markets for these new cameras and anything we, of course, do in the future development world. The point that I was making about that soccer mom thing, which got a lot of traction and a lot of people talking, and I noticed a lot of people trying to figure out what the hell I meant by soccer mom, which was, now everybody got it, was all these parents that are running around after their kids, what sport they may be doing in any of the 60-plus countries that we ship Reds to that are working. A lot of them are using pretty sophisticated tools to shoot still. Now, they're not just taking little point-and-shoot cameras. They've got digital SLRs with real lenses to capture that action, go home and load it onto their Mac or their PC, and look at these pictures in super high resolution and manipulate them, and a lot of them are shooting raw. So they already understand the concept of what Red's all about, whether they've been direct close to it, if you know, happen to be in the cinema industry or not, or somehow tied to it. They're already in this world, whether they know it or not. And then when they come to the Red world, and their world initially probably most likely be the 3K Scarlet line, they'll be using a motion camera capture system that, of course, can also shoot stills with, and shooting raw motion, bringing it into editorial tools, you know, for example, on the Apple side or on the Adobe side, and manipulating that launch, editing out stuff that we did day in and day out in a professional domain in a very different way than with a low-end consumer tool. So that's the sort of soccer mom logic, is if you look at the sidelines of any sort of kid's activity or anything that someone is shooting a digital still camera, all the trade shows that people use, conventions, weddings, bar mitzvahs, you name it, they're not shooting with pocket cameras, these people. They're shooting with real cameras. Well, now they're going to have a real tool on the motion camera side as well.
And the only sort of hole in the product line seems to be this, well, not a hole even, it's just the point that's been raised on the forums today, is why no S35 Scarlet Epic with the 16-bit Monstro sensor. I mean, do you think there's a period that you're going to sort of go away and reevaluate whether or not you've got all the bases covered, all the permutations, or do you feel pretty comfortable you've locked it down?
You know, I think we do that day over day. In terms of, you know, my logic is we never say never at Red. We're always analyzing what we should be doing and how to improve the market for cameras and how successful they're going to be. So if we discover any perceived moments where we say, it sure would be great if we do X, Y, and Z, we think we've got the bases pretty well covered with what we've announced with this whole modular system. But this is just, you know, the first couple days of its life out in the world. So I can guarantee you things are going to morph around and change. And if you look at our taglines, you know, we talk about drastic changes will happen to this stuff before it hits shipping. People that have lived the Red life for a couple of years are very, very accustomed to this and have now reaped the benefits of a company that's super flexible and doesn't lock themselves in and say, this is it. This is what we're building. Leave us alone. We don't want you to leave us alone. We want to know if we're on the right track and if we're on the wrong track. Overwhelmingly, the emails that have been pouring into me all day long are, we are absolutely on the right track. Keep it up. And as people digest it and start to figure it out more, we hone in on the target. So,
well, I'm going to sign off there because A, you need to get some sleep, and B, the line's starting to drop out. But let me just say how much we appreciate you taking the time on what has been obviously a fairly epic day.
And,
and we do really appreciate the you taking the time to talk to us. I know that you must be dead. Thank you so much.
Well, that's fantastic interview. Awesome, Mark. Well done. Yes, he was firing. Clearly, hours and hours of interviews had really prepped him for a interview. Great to know that they listen to people and be able to maybe sort of have some room to move and sort of find the right combo of all these packages.
Yeah, it's also interesting that they've got a new, you know, that guy John, who's now looking after the stills range, and that they are really focused on solving problems like the flash and how that's going to work with the rolling shutter. But look, we need to go. It's a midnight here. It's we need to get this out and up. So, Jason, I'm going to see you back in the studio in a week or so.
Yep. By then, I would have probably worked out, probably had the time to work through the 2 bajillion combinations of all of these bits and pieces.
Yeah. Hey, I will say this, that there's a written story on FX Guide, if you want to have a look at it, that has a rundown of some of this stuff. And also we did some analysis of the what we thought is the sort of financial viability of the Red. So we look forward to you guys having a look at that and reading that at fxguide.com. But until next time, Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. Good night. Have a good night's sleep. And we'll get back together really soon and have a bit more of a chew the fat over this one.
And I just want to give a big thank you to Michael Scott for his work today and also for John Montgomery, who's been up all night editing this. Thanks, guys.
And also a big shout out to Ted for taking the time today and to Red. Good on you guys. It's a culmination of a lot of work here. Obviously, they've got a lot more work to go, but good on you for pushing the boundaries once again.
Until next time, guys. See ya.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2008 FX Guide, LLC.